Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have back Dr. Norman Shealy. His new book, Medical Intuition, A Science of the Soul, is just out, and it is, I guess, the definitive work that I have seen on medical intuition. And he certainly has done the research and has the information that we need to know about what medical intuition is and how we can best use it, hopefully to decrease the cost of medical care. And I guess it's a science that's in the process of being developed, and this is why it's so exciting. How are you doing, Dr. Shealy?
I'm fabulous. Thank you, Susan.
So today, would you like to give our listeners a little bit of background about how you first became aware of medical intuition?
Well, yes. Back in 1971, I sort of got interested in how do you use someone who is, quote, psychic. And I asked friends to refer me someone, so they sent me to Henry Rucker, a wonderful, wonderful black psychic in Chicago. And I walked in and I said, Henry said, oh, I've been waiting, you know, something like 20 years for you. My master told you you would come. And Henry knew more about me than I did.
That's great.
So I invited him to come up to my clinic in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And Henry arrived about a month later, in January of 73, brought with him eight other black psychics, double the population of blacks in the city of La Crosse. But when all of them agreed, they were 98% accurate. Now, Henry was 70-75% accurate by himself.
Right.
And so he became really a pastoral counselor at St. Francis Hospital. And Henry is the best one-on-one counselor I've ever known in my life. An hour with Henry was better than years with most psychiatrists.
That brings up an interesting point that perhaps, you know, when we have certain questions that are so crucial to our public health, such as, you know, the effect of GMO foods or the effect of nanotechnology, electromagnetic contamination, it might be better to run that by a group of clairvoyants in order to get a synopsis or a synthesis of opinion about the risk of these emerging technologies that the risk may not be known.
You're absolutely.
I really think we need to start doing.
I'm absolutely in total agreement. In fact, I've wanted to do this for years. I'd like to bring together, you know, five or six of the best that I personally know, and then just go through a 2 or 3 day discussion of all of these things and publish it. Perhaps even record it and publish it.
Right.
But I think that what I would say, you know, if you get two or three to agree, the chances are you've got something real. And so often when I have a patient or a client who wants me to refer them, I say, okay, I'm going to refer you to three people. Get all of their opinions. If they all agree, or if two of them agree, you know you're probably right. And I recently did that actually with a friend of mine, and his wife was having a problem, and he wrote back and said, all three of them agreed.
That's great. So tell us, first of all, I want to introduce you to the audience who may not know you. Dr. Shealy is the founding president of the American Holistic Medical Association, as well as the author of over, 24 books? This must be 25 now.
Right.
And he is the co-founder of the American Board of Scientific Medical Intuition, which is the only body that I know of in the U.S. that is certifying medical intuitives, and as well as a former practicing neurosurgeon and the inventor of many, many things, which we'll talk about some today, including the TENS unit that are in use all over the world. So Dr. Shealy's experience is vast and includes traditional medicine as well as the emerging science of holistic medicine. With that introduction, I wanted to go back to you know, the idea of how does medical intuition work? What I mean, you studied the best medical intuitives in the world. You've studied psychic surgeons. You've studied, you know, just about all of these different people performing these feats. What is it that allows this to become a science, an emerging science?
Well, it's facts, actually, you know, accuracy. And that's mm-hmm. what I have emphasized since I did my first big research project in 1973 on 75 intuitives. And in those days, we called them clairvoyants or psychics. But when Carolyn and I, later in 1988, were writing our book, The Creation of Health, that's when we created the term medical intuitive, because what we're looking at is not having somebody say, well, there's something black in your tummy.
Right.
It's being able to say, you have cancer of the pancreas. And, you know, I remember one particular case like that where I thought the patient had cancer of the pancreas. Carolyn Mace thought the patient had cancer of the pancreas. And it took us 3 months before the diagnosis could be made medically.
Right.
So a really good intuitive does see these things, sometimes up to a year or more before they become real. But the science is being able to be accurate about where in the body the problem is and what type of physiological pathology there is.
Well, let me share this story with you. When I was having my, I guess, awakening, as you had yourself, your spiritual awakening, you know, a lot of your family members think that you're kind of nuts, right? Well, my mother was accusing me of being involved with Jim Jones. It was that bad. So we went on vacation, and my sister-in-law had a stomach ache, and I put my hand over her stomach just to do a healing, and I saw very clearly that she had a premalignant tumor of her pancreas. And so I told her that, and she went home and got worked up and went to Mass General. They thought she had a malignant tumor, so they did a Whipple, but it turned out she had a premalignant tumor of her pancreas. You know, after that, my family quit calling me names. They started asking questions.
Nothing like a little success to help one along, is there?
But you're right. If you don't specifically, if you see the energy patterns but don't specifically ask the right questions, especially with timing, the information is coming in from another plane, so you may not get the exact time and space where you're at. You may see it in the 3 months in the future where it will be cancer. So it's important to differentiate that.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the situations with a man that, again, you know, I just wasn't able to get through to, and Carolyn says, if he doesn't get over this, he will have cancer of the bowel. Six
right.
months later, he had cancer of the colon.
Right.
And, you know, interestingly, sometimes despite everything that one tries to tell a person, they're so stubborn they won't listen until the disease manifests. But for people who are open, having the counseling and advice of a good medical intuitive is tremendously important. And as a physician, I sometimes have a strong knowing, but our tests are not yet adequate.
Mm-hmm.
to make the diagnoses. And so the more we explore this and the more people practice good medical diagnoses, the better we're all going to be.
So the real valuable thing here is the preventative aspect.
Absolutely.
Being able to look, you know, 6 months into the future and say, if you don't release these issues, you're going to get cancer of the bowel. If you don't... cancer of the pancreas seems to be a very black energy, often an anger with God at taking a loved one away, often a spouse. And I see that very clearly. I mean, what happens with me is when I put my hand over the abdomen, I get all these images, and I actually see the tumors. And being a surgeon, having done Whipples and having done, you know, other procedures helps because you've been there, and it really helps your anatomy. But you also get who it was. Like I put my hand over a patient who had pancreatic cancer, and I said, you know, this is an issue with your daughter. And the wife burst into tears because his daughter had died in a car wreck, and he blamed God.
Mm-hmm.
That anger against God is just a dark, dark, dark energy. Because
right. And
God is all that is. So you
well,
know, you're really fighting with you know with City Hall when you're angry with God.
Of course, anger is really unrecognized depression often.
Right. Right.
And, you know, Hans Eysenck is one of my great favorites of the last century. He was a psychiatrist in England. He did a study over 20 years of some 13,000 people and followed them. They were healthy when he started. And in the next 20 years, 75% of the people who died of cancer had lifelong depression.
Right.
75% of people who died of heart disease had lifelong anger.
Right. That's very true. And, you know, the thing that people have to understand is that anger not properly processed, turned inward, leads to depression and then to cancer. You know, it's like you've got to process your anger. I mean, that's,
exactly.
You know, you've got to, you can't just keep repressing it. You know, as I know, every doctor knows that a lot of cancer patients are very nice people. You know, they don't express their anger. And that may be one of the reasons that, and also their immune systems don't seem to be the same as other patients. So a lot of cancer patients say they never get viral infections. Well, I get frequent viral infections, and I think I get frequent viral infections to release negativity, so I won't get cancer. I mean, that's my opinion.
Well, it's
you know?
True. On the other hand, I think there are things that one can do to strengthen the immune system.
Oh, absolutely.
Even when you haven't become a saint yet.
Yes, now that's true. Sleep is very important, and that's one of the ones that I'm not getting.
Ah, so glad you brought that up. You know, I just finished an interesting little research study in the last month on a funny little thing called Life Wave Silent Nights.
Uh-huh.
It's a little homeopathic patch that you could put in one of five places.
Mm-hmm.
And in 25 people, 18 of them markedly improved their sleep with these little patches.
Great.
And I'm now doing another study on a couple of other related things, different companies. Because, you know, my research and interest is in safe things that help people.
Right.
I've got another little, is it that you have trouble sleeping or you just don't take
the time? Oh, no, I just don't go to bed.
Okay, well, I can't help you with that.
It's my schedule. You know, the Naked Truth About Breast Implant book came out and we're very busy. Which is a blessing and a curse, as you know.
Right. Well, you know, I just force myself to go to bed because I know I can be really grumpy if I don't get enough sleep.
That's true.
You know, I flew out to Las Vegas for a meeting today last night, and I actually slept 9 hours.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, I just love it when I get eight hours is wonderful, but 9 hours is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I just need to sleep. I mean, I used to only sleep 4 to 5 hours a night for the most of my life, but I'm 55 years old now, and I need to sleep more. And I know that that's what I need to do. And so I just have to arrange my schedule so that's possible. So, you know, I'm looking into, you know, additional surgeons and, you know, all the things you have to do in order to clone yourself, which is interesting.
You've got it.
Yeah. But, no, I think, I think diet is very important, and you mentioned that in your book. You're very detailed, as a matter of fact, the food.
Interesting.
They have
low glycemic
index.
One of my most favorite studies was done about 4 years ago, and they actually studied 160,000 people looking at what they consider the four basic habits, which are no smoking, a body mass index between 18 and 24,
mm-hmm.
a minimum of 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, and exercise 30 minutes 5 days a week. Only 3% of Americans have all four of those habits.
Yeah, and Americans aren't very healthy, are they?
Right. And, of course, sleep should be on that list or should be the fifth of those habits because the average American is only getting about 5 hours of sleep.
Right.
And in the late 1700s, the average American slept 10 hours because of light.
Yeah.
We didn't have television and electricity in those days. And so I do think that at the top of one's list should be sleep, and second should be nutrition, and third should be physical activity.
Yeah, that's true. I turned off my nightlight. I had one of those crystal nightlights, and I turned it off when I read your book, because you said that even a little bit of light can decrease your melatonin.
That's right.
And that's good advice.
And if you're going to have even an electric clock, it should be a minimum of 6 feet away from you.
Right.
And the light in it should be red, not green or blue.
And there's nothing wrong with getting a little battery-operated alarm clock. I mean, that's...
No, of course not.
That's like, they're about $7. I bought one recently. So, you know, it certainly is simple enough. But with all of the different stresses that we have, a lot of times we just are too tired to exercise. You know, that's the main problem. That's why I'm trying to not be in the OR so much.
Exactly.
So, well, back to medical intuition. Tell us a little bit about what you have found in your study of medical intuitives, and what we need to develop toward a science of medical intuition.
Well, I think, of course, the most important is being a medical intuitive to yourself. You know, most people block their own reactions to anger and depression and all of these things. And so then we began to get what Wilhelm Reich called armoring.
Uh-huh.
So I would say, conservatively, 99% or more of people are walking around with muscle tension that really is the result of not paying attention to the messages from your own body. So I really think that the best medical intuitives don't always pay attention to their own bodies. But for all of us, if we intuit what's happening in our own bodies and pay attention to it and release the muscle spasms that take place all over and inside the body. You know, Reich said he felt that the muscle tension was cutting off blood supply to the organs and is a cause of cancer. And I think he's right. One study done in Carmel, California showed that women who were non-orgasmic had a temperature in the vagina that was below body temperature.
Really?
Just by teaching them to warm the vagina mentally, they became orgasmic without any psychotherapy. Obviously, a little psychotherapy could also help, but it's really important to get rid of your unfinished anger, guilt, anxiety, and depression over anything. And you need to spend, I believe, 10 or 15 minutes every day of your life intuiting your own body, paying attention to it, listening to it, getting the feedback from it, changing the stress reactions in your body. And nothing is more important in the long run than that, because if you spend that 15 minutes, then you're more likely to pay attention to your physical activity, your diet, etc.
And there are patterns that we see. Women who have been sexually abused, like as children or teenagers, often have premalignant to malignant disease of the breast, as well as undiagnosed pelvic pain.
Absolutely. And here again, however, there are two things. No matter how good your mental thing is, there's certain background parts that we need to pay attention to. One of those is vitamin D.
Uh-huh.
And the other is iodine, because in this country, at least 80% of people are deficient in vitamin D, and roughly the same percentage are deficient in iodine, both of which are tremendous for your immune system.
And magnesium is very important, because without that, you're more likely to get those muscle spasms that you talked
exactly.
about, or muscle tightness.
And again, 80% of people are deficient in magnesium. So these are almost manifest, if you will, and universal nutritional deficiencies. And of course, if we're going to mention magnesium, we have done extreme research on that and found that it's absorbed about 10 to 12 times better through the skin than it is orally.
Yeah, and you've got a lotion that is very good. I've used that.
You know, interestingly, if you use the lotion, it not only raises your intracellular magnesium levels, but also your DHEA, dehydroepiandrosterone.
Right. Which,
and taking it orally or even intravenously does not do that.
That's interesting, isn't it? Doesn't progesterone do the same thing topically, raise your DHEA?
Yes. Progesterone is one of the other for natural ways of restoring DHEA. And I think that almost all women after menopause, especially, and all men after andropause, age 50 and above, will do well to have some progesterone. And men, I think, once a day of a quarter teaspoon is adequate. In women, I think a quarter teaspoon twice a day.
Right, right. Are you familiar with Dr. Hammer's work of biological conflict in cancer?
Yes.
And, you know, he had an interesting finding of a brain lesion that was observable in CAT scan that corresponded to the organ that became cancerous, and then related the biological conflict that caused that scenario. Now, you're a neurosurgeon and obviously know a lot about neurology. What is going on with it?
Well, you know, I think there are many things going on. 8 or 9 years ago, when I decided that I was going to not see patients 45 hours or more a week, I would have stayed in my clinic building because I've continued research and writing and, you know, other such things. But I found the electromagnetic background in my office on the edge of Springfield, Missouri, at 2.5 to 3 milligauss everywhere.
Right.
So we know that the background in Atlanta is about 5 milligauss.
You know, I just bought a machine to measure that. I haven't taken it out of the box yet. Isn't that an interesting synchronicity?
I think it's time. I presume that's something
it's
like
the
Trifield meter, right?
Yeah, it
okay.
is.
Okay.
It is. So I'll do that next week.
If you're getting 3 milligauss of electromagnetic energy all the time, this doubles your incidence of brain cancer and leukemia.
Right.
Yeah, and so I actually sold my clinic in Springfield and put it out on my farm where we have no measurable background electromagnetic energy.
Right.
And just because I didn't want my brain exposed to it all the time. Now,
right.
I did do some research, and I have no financial interest in it, but we did find that a little thing called the Claris Q pendant will protect the brain from up to 50 milligauss of electromagnetic energy. So in my opinion, anybody living in any big city needs to do something like that to protect their brain. Baltimore is about 5 milligauss of background everywhere.
Yeah. I'm sure Atlanta is. We've got cell towers everywhere.
Well, it's true. I mean, if Springfield, 150,000, has 2.5 to 3 milligauss background, we know that the bigger cities, and I've only measured it a couple, but they'll have 5 milligauss or more. So everybody there is doubling their risk of brain cancer.
Right.
And leukemia.
To say nothing of the cell phones.
we don't know yet, although to me the evidence is pretty good.
Yeah, I interviewed Dr. Carlo on the radio show, and he had quite a bit of evidence.
Well, I think we know that people who use it a lot have a marked increase in the incidence of tumors of the acoustic, the eighth cranial nerve, the hearing nerve.
Yeah.
And on the side where they use the phone, most people use it on one side.
Right.
My suspicion is most people use it on the left side because they're doing something with the right hand at the same time.
That's true.
But it's 4 times as great an incidence of... Now, these are benign tumors, but it's not a benign place to have a tumor.
No, not at all. It usually takes out your hearing nerve.
Exactly. So I use a cell phone. I turn it on when I need to make a call.
That's what I do, too. Right.
And when I promise somebody, well, you can call me, I'll turn it on. Otherwise, I don't leave it on at any time, and I don't use it as a routine phone.
Right, and I don't carry it with me either. It's in my locker. And it's not, and after 5, I return phone calls on it, you know, if they're long distance and I'm traveling. But, you know, it's convenient, but you have to be careful with these things. You really do.
Exactly. I mean, you know.
Again, we need a group of medical intuitives to look at that. You see?
I would love it. I would just love to pull these people together for...
Well, I will help you do it if you ever decide to do it. Cause,
well, why don't we do it out at our farm where we don't have any electromagnetic background?
That would be best. They'd probably get much more accurate readings. I don't know whether I ever told you this, but I was interviewing Colette Baron Reed, who, as you might know, is touring with Sylvia Brown. So she's a world-class psychic.
Right.
And she had a book called Remembering the Future, which is on developing your intuition. And it was 2006, and breast implants had just been put back on the market by the FDA, and Colette is Canadian, and I was telling her that, and she just randomly said, oh, they'll be taken off again because they're going to react with something in the food supply. Well, then I discovered five of my patients eating lunch meat every day developed Morgellons disease. And then Dr. Stanninger found that the fibers in Morgellons were high-density polyethylene, which were on the lunch meat. They were being sprayed nanotechnology around a viral phage to prevent listeria infections. And then, of course, my patients were full of silicone. So there you go. And I was just—I was amazed. I was sitting there. She just said that like as if she said, oh, yeah, and then we're going to go out for coffee, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, it is amazing. The psychics and clairvoyants don't even have to have that much information. They just bring in information that's extremely valuable to people like myself who actually are in the clinic seeing the problems.
I totally agree. And of course, I don't know if I ever told you, I saw 75 women who had problems with their silicone breast implants. 73 of them clearly had evidence of autoimmune disease.
Yep, they did. And they had neurological problems, too.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. Autoimmune disease is not restricted to one organ. It affects
all of
everything.
The body. Yeah. Well, chemicals cause autoimmune disease. It's a known model. And guess what leaks out of breast implants?
Oh, yeah.
So well, it's hardly a surprise.
You know, it's another reason that I live on a farm, because we raise probably close to 90% of all the vegetables that we eat.
That's
and
wonderful.
We raise at least 70% of the fruits that we eat. And we've never had a pesticide or an herbicide in 40 plus years on our farm. So our stuff at least has not been chemically contaminated that way, and it's much better for you.
That's true. And do you use free-range meat then, too?
Absolutely. Free-range chicken, free-range beef, free ocean salmon from Alaska.
Right.
Well, it's actually river there, but whatever. That's all the meats that we eat is natural meats.
What do you anticipate from the Gulf oil spill in terms of hydrocarbons getting in the food chain?
I don't think I'm going to be eating any seafood from the Gulf for the next 20 years.
Okay.
Personally.
I had a patient that he actually had a chemical burn to his foot 5 years ago, and I put a skin graft on the area, and he went swimming in the Gulf near Panama City, and the graft started to die. So he came to me, and we did this electrolysis foot bath that gets out hydrophobic chemicals, and it became okay. But I think I know the mechanism of that. I think those hydrophobic chemicals, those aromatic hydrocarbons, which are in the Gulf, you know, they're chemicals. You can't see them. You can't smell them unless there's enough of them, interfere with the blood supply to my graft. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we know that petrochemicals are already causing an epidemic of infertility.
Yeah.
Odd hormonal changes, especially in men, because many of the petrochemicals are estrogen-like.
Right.
And
they're
of course,
depressing sperm levels.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know the sperm count in men has gone down in the last 40 years from 150,000 to just under 50,000, and when it gets down to 25,000. We ain't going to reproduce.
Oh, man, that's terrible. That's it might be good for the Earth, though.
Well, that's true. And then, of course, there is the possibility of sunspots, of course, and sunstorms adding to this. But basically, we do not need petrochemicals in our food supply, on our land, in our air, and especially in the ocean.
Right. Yeah, they're very carcinogenic, if people don't know. And there's a concern of them in the rain, too. Because
exactly. I mean,
storm clouds can go many, many, many miles away from the Gulf.
Every time we get a rain, we haven't had many the last 3 months, I go out and feel it to be sure it's not oily.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. I was in Austria 3 days after Chernobyl.
Oof,
yeah, and so every time it rained, I made sure I got inside. I really don't know which way the wind was blowing that problem, but yeah, it does. But things travel. I mean, and again, this is a spiritual principle. You know, no man or no country or no city is an island. We affect each other.
Have you read the Holographic Universe?
I have.
Isn't that a wonderful book?
It's great.
I think better than any other book, it helps me understand our remarkable interconnectedness.
Yeah, it's like reality, third-dimensional reality is like a holographic videotape. That's what I got
exactly.
out of it.
You got it.
Yeah.
And now, that brings us back to the whole thing of intuition, because basically, all that's happening with intuition is one is seeing through, if you will, the superficial physical reality.
Right.
Because it really is a superficial physical reality. I mean, I'm beginning, finally, after reading and reading and reading and thinking about this, to understand that things are not what we think they are. They are part of an illusion.
Right, yeah.
But all creativity, all, not just medical intuition, but art and science and music and all of the arts and sciences are really the result of intuition.
They are. All significant scientists who've made their mark knew that they were getting information from a higher source.
Exactly.
And they often did activities like Einstein taking his cat naps and other people doing. I think Newton got his idea because he was kind of asleep and an apple dropped on his head, right? Or you know, all of these things are activities that where you're not engaged in totally left brain domination, but more a balanced brain or a right brain.
I used to think I occasionally had a new idea, but what I realize is that it's in the cosmos, and so
it is.
If my television receptor in my brain is open properly, I get the message.
Right. I also am toying with the idea more and more that whenever a problem arises in consciousness, the solution rises at the same time, because we do live in a duality.
Exactly.
And the problem and solution forces us into a higher level of consciousness, as Einstein said.
Well, that's the good news about stress, isn't it? But it is essential.
Well, life is stress. I mean,
yeah. And we know that animals, and they've tried it in pigs especially, that are raised in what looks like a non-stressful environment, then when exposed to stress, actually die of heart attacks.
Right.
So a certain amount of stress, if you learn to cope with it well, is absolutely essential to living happily and healthily.
You said something in your book that caught my attention, and that was that a lot of people who had heart attacks had them because they were unable to, I can't remember the exact words, but the idea was that they were unable to accept that their thoughts about reality were not what actually were happening.
Exactly.
And, interesting idea.
You know, in general, the interesting thing in another aspect of that is that despite the original concept of type A and type B personality, actually type A's live longer than type B's, because type A's let at least express their anger.
Right.
Type B's hold it in, and that's not good for you.
No.
Not that one needs to, you know, attack the world with one thing, but one needs to express it and deal with it and then be done with it.
Right. And that's the idea, like, of writing a letter to someone you're pissed off at, but then burning it.
Exactly. One of my favorites.
Right.
Because it isn't always worth talking to the person. It doesn't matter to them.
No.
And of course, my most favorite statement of all is, holding a grudge is like taking poison and expecting it to kill the other person.
That's right. That's a very good one. So when we look at spontaneous remission, and I know that you've studied this a lot, I'm actually looking at the Noetic Science Spontaneous Remission right now in my den here. When you look at spontaneous remission, you often see great changes in mind, in the mind of the person, or great, a 180-degree turn in something, a grudge that they go, or otherwise forgive an incident or a situation or a person.
Absolutely. As one of my patients who did cure herself that way, in 17 minutes, she cured herself of widely metastatic cancer.
And how did she do that?
She said, during that exercise, I suddenly realized how much I hated my family, and I decided I'm not going to let the bastards kill me.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
It's not what I call perfect insight, but it was adequate for her.
Right.
She got well. Her husband committed suicide.
Isn't that interesting?
And then, a year later, so 2.5 years altogether, after this, her dog died, and she became depressed.
Right.
And her pain returned.
Uh-huh.
But when we worked with her, fortunately, she came back before it lasted too long, and she said to me, I now realize I cannot afford the luxury of depression.
That's true for all of us.
It's true. Depression, anger, anxiety, guilt, and all of their synonyms are poison.
Yeah, they are.
And none of us can afford them. So it's all right to get angry, but get over it today, not tomorrow, not a year from now.
Don't go to bed angry.
But, I often say, I was depressed one day in my life, and I've been very fortunate. 15 years ago when I was temporarily paralyzed, a week later I'm sitting there with my right vocal cord totally paralyzed, my neck in a brace, still barely walking, and I had my Job day of moaning and groaning about, I didn't deserve this.
Uh-huh.
And I said, this is nonsense. If I keep thinking like this, I'll never get well. And that was the end of it.
Well, I want to take you into the chapter in your book on reincarnation. And I do, because that helped you, that understanding of reincarnation helped you understand why that incident led to that thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's very important.
The New York Times today had an interesting article that was positive on past life therapy.
Really?
I found, absolutely amazing. I've never seen one in such a major publication. And they said, it's not scientists, but it's therapists who are doing this. Well, as you know, I consider past life therapy the single most powerful psychotherapeutic tool that I know, and I've used it since 1972. I know that every significant illness is the result of a past life unfinished connection.
Oh, I've found that too. I found that there is often a very, very deep connection, especially when things happen that are otherwise unexplainable. If somebody develops a horrible pain in their chest and, you do the workup, there's nothing there, you put them on the table, they were stabbed through the chest with a spear. You release life, pain goes away.
Exactly. And
if they have a heart attack, that's something different. That's not a past life issue.
That's right.
you got to work it up.
and of course, the biggest, in my opinion, the place where you need to work with yourself and intuition is not to create any new karma, new unfinished business that will carry with you after this life.
Right.
Because, if you carry out of this life anger, guilt, anxiety, depression, it's unfinished.
That's true.
And
then you'll deal with it in the next life.
Yep, you're going to have to come back at some point in the future and deal with it. So you might as well deal with it now and get over it.
I notice in your book you talk about being a physician in Egypt about 4,000 years ago. This morning I was watching a show on the History Channel. It was, I can't remember the name of it. Is what makes it work or something like that. But it was on all of our modern medicine things that date back to Egypt. And I thought of you because it was all the surgical tools and all the idea of the pharmacy. Of course, they use natural things, but you might want to watch that. It's it might take you back because they have a lot of great pictures.
Wonderful. And you know, interestingly, as a child and even an adult, I guess my favorite period in history is Old Egypt.
Yeah. It was really quite remarkable. They had anesthesia. They had the surgical instruments were really interesting. They used obsidian knives. And what's interesting, you know, I don't know whether you know this, but I did an experiment on obsidian knives in plastic surgery where we did one side, we were doing breast cases, we did one side with a regular scalpel and one side with an obsidian knife just to look at the scarring.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I must have had an Egyptian life as well if I'm sitting there using obsidian knives. But they're very they cut very, very cleanly and scar better.
You know that Edgar Casey said you never walk down the street and pass someone you've not known in a previous life.
Yeah, that's how many times we've been here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that means that it's an opportunity to clean up unfinished business either or continue a positive relationship. Both are important.
Right. So whenever you meet somebody you instantly don't trust or instantly like, there is usually reasons for that.
Exactly. And of course, the most fun is when you instantly like, because you know that there your relationship's going to be pretty free of stress.
That's right. So, anything else you'd like to add about the subject of medical intuition? Would you like to comment on the board you have to study and certify medical intuitives?
Right. Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, as I said, the term medical intuitive didn't exist until 1988.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, there were 12 million listings on Google. Now, interestingly, there are only 295,000 now. But 99% of those people who are calling themselves medical intuitives have no testing whatsoever. They are what I call space cadets.
Right.
They have no proof of their accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And to call yourself a medical intuitive without knowing that you're a minimum of 75% accurate is, in my opinion, fraud.
Right.
And, I mean, it's truly intuitive fraud.
You scare people, especially when you tell them they have cancer.
Well, and that's something else that it's malpractice, I think, for anyone. In fact, even the best of medical intuitives won't tell you that unless they're recommending that you check it out with a physician.
Right, exactly.
And so what you want really is, yeah, it's important to find out whether there is something physically wrong as a result of your unfinished business. But more importantly, you want to learn to deal with that unfinished thing. For instance, there's a wonderful intuitive who wouldn't go near calling herself a medical intuitive, a Barbara Raser, R-A-S-O-R,
mm-hmm.
and she calls herself an emotional intuitive. And again, Henry Rucker, whom I mentioned earlier, is no longer with us, but Barbara is the best one-on-one counselor I know today because she'll say, oh, what happened at age 12 between you and so-and-so?
Right.
And getting that kind of emotional help
mm-hmm.
is critically important for most people.
Yeah, what you see is you see blockages. And I think what a lot of intuitives do is they run the timeline and see when the blockage is and then they're given, usually by hearing or sight, the person or incident or whatever, the fall or the fight with the sib or the,
right.
you know, whatever, the death of the parent, you know, whatever. And that's what, you know, that's a good way to do it. Just say, what happened at this age? You know, that's a very good way to do it. Because otherwise, you don't want to just insert information in and maybe create a false memory. I know there's been a lot of problems with false memories in some of these, you know, some of the court cases and everything.
Exactly.
False memories. But that's a good way to do it. Say, what about this, you know, and let the person go back and remember it. Open-ended questions, just like a good psychiatrist does.
Exactly. And they can then help you. I mean, I love some of Barbara's techniques of, for instance, bringing out your five-year-old child and talking to it and nurturing it,
right.
That kind of thing, which can be powerfully effective in helping people come to grips with their problems from this life.
Right. And past life regression can help with past life. You know,
oh, yeah.
And a good intuitive knows which area is most pressing.
And of course, people can be trained in that. I need to put in a plug for Morris Netherton, because Morris, I call Morris the best in the world doing past life therapy. He could make the Pope have a past life experience.
That's great.
Or an Orthodox rabbi, because he just is so skilled.
Yeah.
And he does teach a two-part course, a part one and a part two in past life therapy, and one can become certified as a past life
uh-huh.
therapist through him. He started the whole Apple. It's the original society for studying past life therapy. And so if people are interested, have them look up Morris Netherton or get in touch with me, because next spring he will have another course.
Great, great. So you had how many candidates did you have that you tested in your in the course of the study that you mentioned in your book for medical intuition?
Oh, you mean with the course that Carolyn and I gave?
Right.
Well, we had 84 who entered and 35 who finished. And interestingly, although they were excellent at counseling,
right.
They were not excellent at making diagnoses, because they wouldn't practice. This is what I learned. A lot of the people who were studying with us for 4 years
uh-huh.
wouldn't do their homework.
Really?
And we recognized halfway through the course that they weren't going to become medical intuitives because they weren't practicing. But through all the techniques we were teaching them, they were going to become excellent counseling intuitives. So the 35 who finished all became excellent counseling intuitives.
Well, Carolyn talks in her in her lectures as well as her books about the importance of really studying anatomy and physiology if you want to be a medical intuitive.
Exactly.
If you don't have the files, you can't possibly bring in the information.
I mean, exactly.
You have to know what side the liver is on.
Exactly. You know, if it's not on the left side.
That's right. And unless you have situs inversus.
Exactly. And I've never seen one of those. I'm sure it must.
I have. I had a patient with ruptured breast implants. In fact, this is interesting. She was having seizures. And she was, I think she was in her late 70s, and her husband was about 32. It was a very interesting couple. And he brought her up from Florida, and we did her surgery, and he reported later that her seizures had stopped after I took out her ruptured implants.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that, glad you brought that one up. That reminds me of another interesting case. I had almost 20 years ago, and actually this was a woman from Atlanta. I was going to be demonstrating to a group of clinical hypnotists my technique for past life therapy, and this woman
uh-huh.
found out about it and wrote me. For several years, we'd had a lot of plane crashes. 24 hours before every plane crash, she had a seizure.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I did a past life therapy session on her in front of about 60 people, and she gave a history of having been an American Indian in a past life, and she was on watch one night and fell asleep, and her little band was all murdered.
Yeah,
or
guilt.
Exactly. So interestingly, after that past life therapy session, she had no further seizures.
That's great.
And I have a lithograph of that she did. She was an artist as well. She did a painting of the Indian
uh-huh.
from that life is what she saw. And that hangs at my office, because I mean, there's a cure of epilepsy with past life therapy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I suspect from what Casey said, and by the way, you do a wonderful review of Casey's life and work in your book. I just love it. There's a lot that Casey says about past life, especially in many cases, sexual excesses leading to epilepsy in the, not seizures per se, but the disease epilepsy in the current life. And he even said that a lot of children with leukemia were actually murderers in previous lives. And so his work is a wealth of information, especially about childhood diseases as manifestations of previous life excesses or indiscretions.
Well, let's face it, Edgar Cayce is certainly the most genius of all medical intuitives who's ever been reported, because
no doubt.
He not only did almost 10,000 readings related to health and healing, but he was at least 80% accurate back in the 20s, 30s, and into the mid-40s.
Right.
And a lot of his things have been extremely helpful even today.
Oh, yeah, they are. Well, we're coming to the end of our hour, Dr. Shilley. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. I have a website, NormShealy, NormShealy.com. They can sign up for my free email newsletter. Comes out every Wednesday and sometimes in between as well. They can look in the archives of my newsletter there. They go back 5 years, so they're all there in alphabetical order. And I have my optimal recommendations there, which gives what I think are the best alternatives for many, many diseases. So that's, my number one recommendation is get on my newsletter list.
I love your newsletter.
Well, thank you. You know, interestingly, every once in a while, I get a really angry note back from somebody, and I say, well, get over it. You know, I mean, I sometimes purposefully tweak things in order to arouse people's passions.
See if they have a sense of humor, huh?
Exactly.
A good humor check, as the fighter pilots used to say.
And every once in a while, I publish, with permission, somebody else's comments, which I don't necessarily approve of 100%, but they're worth knowing about.
Right, that's true.
And I had one person recently, I'm unsubscribing to your newsletter because you've put this in here. Well, good old, fine. Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
I mean, you know, my point is, I think people have to listen to all angles.
Because the only way you learn.
Nobody is perfect, including me. And I think it's critically important to take opinions from all sides. But also, I want to emphasize that if a physician recommends any kind of major drug that carries risks or major surgery that carries risks that's elective, you need to get at least a second opinion. Now, personally, I think a second opinion from a totally independent physician is ideal, but that is also a time to consider a medical intuitive consultation. Because I think 15% of the time people are going to live and be healthy because of surgery or drugs. About 85% of the time, you'll do better to use an alternative.
That's true. And especially when the cause of it isn't quite known.
Exactly.
And it's more of an exploratory or, you know, kind of let's try this and see if it works, which happens more than we like in medicine, as you know. So that's good advice. I use medical intuitive information all the time. I mean, I have a group of people that I ask questions of about my own health and about my patient's health too, especially
with all
that stroke.
And I even
ask, is it safe to do surgery? I sure do.
And also, I'm glad you brought that one up. If the patient has a great fear that they're going to die or have a complication, hey,
don't operate on them.
Don't operate on them unless it's an absolute emergency.
Right? Yeah,
that's a good reason. You know, there is negative intuition.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
And that, of course, is the result of unfinished business, namely fear of some kind.
But fear creates just like love creates.
Oh, yes.
It certainly does. You have to be very careful. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Shealy. I've certainly enjoyed this hour. We've been interviewing Dr. Norm Shealy on his new book, Medical Intuition, A Science of the Soul, Your Awakening to Wholeness. And I think we would love to have you back on in the future, because I know you've got other things not in the book to discuss that we didn't discuss last time because I was sick. Anyway, I thank you again for joining us. Next week, we'll be interviewing Eric Mercola and his movie, the Bernowski movie. This is Dr. Bernowski's story with a cancer cure that has been suppressed. On the 11th, we're interviewing Harold Koenig on his book Chronic Pain. And on the 18th, we're having back Paul Rademacher, Consciousness, Spirituality, and the Monroe Institute. Paul is the head of the Monroe Institute. And we will be interviewing the author of Fatty Liver on the 25th. We have our Noetic Science meeting on, September 16th at 7:30. Dr. Brad Gould will be presenting on electromagnetic fields and how they affect your health. Dr. Sheila and I were talking about that earlier. And we have a quote here from Andrew Weil. EMF pollution may be the most significant form of pollution human activity has produced in this century, all the more dangerous because it is invisible and insensible. Anyway, thank you for joining us. This has been Temple of Health Radio Show.
And have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastikos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plastikos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastikos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. Plastikos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.